Welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we explore the week's big political stories. I'm Mike Siluma, and thank you for joining us once more. In March this year, President Cyril Ramaphosa legally recognized Prince Misuzulu Gazwelithini as the king-elect of the Zulu people, following the death last year of the long-reigning King Goodwill Zwelithini Gabhekuzulu. But subsequent events around the Zulu royal household suggest that the president's decision does not enjoy universal support. To talk to us about the rift, or the apparent rift, in the royal household, as well as the position of traditional authorities in a democratic dispensation, Dr. Fikile Vilakazi, a frequent guest on the show, who lectures public policy and political science at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, as well as Zemasa Matiwane, who's a Sunday Times politics correspondent.
With immediate effect.
When people saw
us, and I quote, "In 2 years' time, Eskom's problems will be a thing of the past. People won't even remember load shedding," unquote.
They put saliva on the paper.
I'm in charge. That's why these fools are running around here. I'm in charge.
And then they share that zone.
Point of order, Chairperson.
Order, Chairperson.
Point of order.
The
ruling party by
point of order.
Must step aside within 30 days.
No, I'm not going to apologize.
He has no brains whatsoever.
So the ANC president was sabotaged again yesterday?
Well, sabotage, that can be
this
determined.
Is not a Shakespeare.
Can you please come in?
Welcome to the two of you. Shall we start with you, Zemasa? You have been watching developments around the Zulu royal household quite closely, especially since the passing of Isilo, King Goodwill Zwelithini Gabhekuzulu. Currently, what is the dispute about? Because we thought that when the president made the announcement, you know, confirming or endorsing Prince Misuzulu, that was the end of the dispute, or that the train had left the station. What is the dispute about at the moment?
Good afternoon, Bramike. So the decision by the president would have been, you know, a final endorsement if it was informed by a united family behind one candidate. So when the president made the declaration, he was aware that other family members are not comfortable with, you know, the king-elect, if I may put it that way. And, you know, the source of the issues, you know, started when the king died. But what the president, I believe, used as his basis to say this is the Zulu king was a meeting that was held and that did not have members of the royal council, the elders who were put in place by King Goodwill Zwelithini to be part of this decision-making process. So that meeting had a lot of, you know, different family and the traditional prime minister of the Zulu nation. So the people who are opposed to Prince Misuzulu were not part of that meeting that endorsed him as the next king. However, they lost challenging, you know, that decision in court, and now it was struck off the roll on matters of urgency. In another attempt to interdict the coronation. So that is where we are at the moment.
So what is happening between this weekend and next weekend?
This weekend, it's quite complicated for me because I'm not Zulu, so I don't know the significance of the ceremony, but it's something called ukungena esibayeni. That is being done for Prince Magade on Saturday, and according to my knowledge, the ceremony is going to take place just days before the same ceremony is going to be held for for Prince Misuzulu, whose coronation is scheduled to take place on the 20th of August. So I'm assuming it's something that has to be done towards the coronation. I'm not 100% sure at this point.
Okay. Dr. Vilakazi, are you able to assist us as to the significance of this ceremony?
Good afternoon, Pramaik, and good afternoon to the listeners at home. The significance of the ceremony that is happening on the weekend, Pramaik, I'm also speaking under correction, but when you look at the customs of the Zulu monarchy and how they function, is that they've always, believed in the power of ritual in terms of processes like coronation and recognition, of course, of every member of the royal family that is seen to have a right to be taken through that particular ritualization. And given the whole process of contestation of royalty, around Inkosi uMisuzulu, the process of ngena esibayeni, as we know, isibaya traditionally in the Zulu nation is a place that is sacred. Isibaya is a place that looks like umsamo as well, where you constantly go there and do rituals of negotiation with the ancestors and the ancestresses to communicate processes. We call it isiZulu ukundlalela, where you are actually making a supplication, you are introducing a process that is going to come. Now, when there is a king in any particular kingdom or monarchy, there's a process also that says the king doesn't just go without indlalelo. In this particular case, because it is not a question of bereavement, you also do that process when a process of coronation is going to happen. Somebody has got to then be brought before the ancestors and ancestresses as some form of supplication to say, siyangena manje esibayeni sivula indlela, for that person to be able to have a blessed process, for lack of a better word, a process that has been communicated according to the ritualization of that particular kingdom. In the context of AmaZulu, it's called ubuya esibayeni. It means ukuyondlalela, to lay the foundation, to interpret it differently.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So for someone or who doesn't understand isiZulu, ukuya isibaya yini kunje in a little, for someone who's not,
for someone, okay, Pramaki, isibaya in English terminology is a crawl. Really, it is a crawl, but it's not like you are talking about a crawl that just houses cows in this context. You are talking about a spiritual symbolism of a sacred place of prayer, a sacred place of communication with spirit guides, with ancestors and ancestresses, those who have gone before us. Because in Zulu culture, we believe that those who are gone before us do not depart amongst us, they stay with us, which is why when kings and queens depart, they are buried in a certain way. There are certain rituals that have got formed to reconnect families in that process. So Maguiwa esibayeni, when we go to the crawl, it is that particular place that is really a powerful a space of communication and reconnection.
Mm. So this would be a very serious development if, as uZimasa was saying, Uchi, Prince Magate is doing the ceremony this weekend, and next weekend Prince Misuzulu is doing a similar thing. So potentially it can lead to a major clash or confusion at the very least.
Totally, it can, also just in terms of the spiritual chaos as well, because you are seeing in the kingdom Yamazulu this rift that existed after the passing of Inkosi uGuduzwelithini, the fight for the throne, really coming from a will that was left behind by uQueen Mantfombi, stating very clearly that the person that is seen to be ready and fit to take the throne in Inkosi uMisuzulu. And of course, the brothers and the other families of the royal family fighting that. So if you are then seeing Princess Magate going to the crawl just before Inkosi uMisuzulu is going to be coronated, it can have that potential of creating chaos spiritually, but also within the kingdom, as we have been seeing it happening and displaying itself you know, and it could be seen as witchcraft as well. Many of us, I know, do not believe in witchcraft, Bramaik. But witchcraft is something that is also seen to be very prevalent in traditional societies and traditional communities as a process that could thwart somebody's possibilities of success. In this particular case, it could be seen as an act of witchcraft as well against the coronation of Inkosi uMisuzulu. But of course, that is superstition, right, for other people. But if you look at then belief systems in our culture, in our traditions, some people really still believe in things like witchcraft, but
they can matter as a factor. Mm.
Totally. You know, and it can then cause chaos within amakhosi themselves, namakhosikazi, but also the royal family itself and the nation of AmaZulu to say yihaba lento enzakalayo, which means this is an omen. An omen is almost like something that happens that can result into a curse. So that is what the challenge of this process of Yoga Esibayeni Yaga Prince Smagate, you know, can signal before Inkosi uMisuzulu is coronated, because there is that is happening, because the spirits are not together. But if it was happening in the context where there's peace, you know, there's no contestation, it would probably be welcomed as a pure process. Get to it, Mikey, you know, just to not be long. In any family, I don't know, cultures are different, but what is normally said, I mean, even in a different context, they always say if there's a dispute in the family, there are certain rituals that you just cannot perform. Things like slaughtering, things like speaking to the ancestors in certain spaces that are considered sacred before you make peace through a process of conversation, before you enter into a dialogue that appeases the spirits that are, you know, embody our different bodies, particularly in kingdoms and queendoms. Without that process happening, it can be an omen.
Mm. So as a matter, the Dokotela is warning that you don't do certain processes until, you know, unless there is peace and harmony, you know, in the household or in the family. What one would have thought, which, because this is a long, I mean, the Zulu monarchy has been in existence for a long time, and one would have thought that the processes for appointing or anointing a Ingonyama is like very straightforward and set, you know. In this case, what exactly is the dispute, and how far is it now? Is it still in the courts? Is it out of the courts? Is it just being dealt with traditionally, or what is the situation currently?
The situation currently is that the family is divided three ways, I believe. So the divisions I think are getting worse. I don't think they're getting better. Also, the family has never met Brymike to say, let's sit and try and solve this thing. There's been interventions by, you know, COCTA and various influential leaders in the province to say, you know, let's try and put them together in a room and see if we can't come up with a solution. And, you know, one grouping would come and then another grouping wouldn't come. So they've been avoiding each other. They've never sat down to talk. Another thing is, so the court cases are ongoing. I mean, it was struck off the roll for matters of urgency, but it will continue at an appropriate time. So there is also that aspect as well. And then now you have the ceremony that Prince Magade is doing over the weekend at Enyogeni. And that is going to be even more divisive because now it's not a matter of just, let's sit down, let's talk. No, I'm going to challenge this in court. It's taking practical steps towards claiming the throne. So I think that makes it even more complicated now as we come to this weekend.
Okay. Well, what does someone who is not too close to the accession, you know, succession processes, might ask, which is it a question of how would any of the princes ascend to traditionally to become king? Is it about seniority? Is it about a meeting of the family deciding based on personal character, personal characteristic, how charming the prince is or not? How is it decided? You know, because the point I'm trying to get to is between Prince Misuzulu and Prince Magate, where do they fit in the lineage?
King Goodwill Zwelithini was in the throne for over 50 years. And when he was put on the throne, his mother was never married to the king, his father. His mother was a commoner. I'm not too clear on the Zulu history, but I mean King Shaka Kasenza Ngakhona did not have a child. And, you know, someone else took over after him. I'm not sure if there's a traditional established way of doing things. However, when I speak to, you know, people who are clear on Zulu culture, they are adamant that the firstborn son of the wife of the nation is the rightful heir. That makes a Misuzulu the rightful heir, according to a lot of people, because his mother is, you know, from royalty, his father is from royalty, and stuff like that.
You mentioned something that many of us might not understand. You said the wife of the nation. What does that mean?
The wife of the nation is in this instance the late Queen Mantombi. Her lobola came from the Zulu nation. It was, you know, collected from this household. What can we get a cow? From this household, can you, you know, donate a cow? We are going to, you know, King Sobhuza. We are going to bring Umntwana Inkosi to, you know, to come and marry into the Zulu nation and, you know, produce the next heir of the Zulu nation. So basically, it's the wife of the nation is basically someone who comes from royalty. And there is only one person who comes from royalty out of all his six wives, and that is Queen Mantombi. And the lobola was paid for by the nation.
And Queen Mantombi would be Prince Misuzulu's mother.
Yes. There's a lot of complication that happened with King Goodwill Zwelithini being, you know, put on the throne during the apartheid and, you know, the IFP era, and him staying until the transition to democracy. But what he did post 1994 was that he sat down and he said, "I am establishing something that we call a royal council." He put the names of the people there. I don't remember how many, but some are still alive. I mean, we've spoken to some; they are still alive. This is the Royal Council. These are the people that, when things are tough, you are going to revert back to them. When there are decisions to be made, you are going to revert back to them. So what the family did was, after the mourning period, because remember, Prince Misuzulu was, you know, essentially put on the throne on the day of his mother's funeral by Buthelezi and, you know, a lawyer and a letter.
That's when the letter was read out in a press conference that evening.
Yeah. So these other the other sides were saying, we have a mourning period, we have to do, you know, these and these rituals before we even get into who is next. So when they eventually held that meeting with the Royal Council and they brought the queens, they brought all King Zwelithini's children, I think with the exception of Mandombis, because they did not want to come or something like that. And there were three names that were nominated for the throne. It was Prince Misuzulu, it was Princess Magade. Prince Misuzulu was nominated because, well, his mother is from royalty. Prince Magade was nominated. The argument was that, well, he's the firstborn. We don't have something in the Zulu culture that says, no, this child is born out of marriage. If you are born of a Zulu man, then you belong to, you know, that family. And then you had a third option, Prince Buzabazi. And I mean, he's not even the firstborn son in from his mother, but they were saying, this is the person who we believe as the family was being mentored by his father. These are the qualities that he has. This is what he knows. This is what he can do. So there were those three names. However, that process, I don't believe it went on too far, because I mean, you know, the traditional prime minister had already done his own process on the side. So that is what happened, basically.
Dr. Vilakazi, I'd like for you to come in as we change tech slightly. It would seem, you know, that as South Africans, we are living with two systems, you know, the traditional system and the constitutional, or the republic, if you like. You know, for example, the king gets anointed or nominated, but it is the president of the constitutional state who has to give legal or constitutional endorsement. So it seems like and yet he cannot unilaterally appoint a king. If you see what I'm trying to say. So it looks like we're dealing with two systems which are sitting side by side, but they don't always easily talk to each other. How do you read that? What is the challenge here for us as South Africa, which is a constitutional state, but also which has got a lot of traditional elements within it?
But Mike, we just need to remember, perhaps go back a little bit, to 1927, to the Bantu Administration Act, right? That Administration Act was changing a system of administration for colonies, and it gave certain powers to royal families and to kings and queens and chiefs to be able to work hand in hand with the apartheid government and the colonial governments to lead what you called the Bantustans at that time. And that is a system that we have inherited from that colonial rule and apartheid rule, you know, literally. As we're transitioning to democracy, Bramaiki, what happened is that you would remember the Kodesa negotiations. One of the negotiations, particularly from Mrs. Osama Zulu, you know, under the leadership of the Prime Minister, Inkosi Buthelezi, we're saying that we will never enter this government of democracy unless we are, you know, viewed in the manner that the Bantu Administration Act is viewing us as having power, and the royalty is not touched by the system that is called now constitutional democracy. But we will be part of a democratic system, but we want to have a particular enjoyment of special rights, so to say, as what you call now traditional leadership. And that is what actually happened. That is how Inkatha Freedom Party became part of the negotiations, for example, you know, for leading towards transitioning to democracy in South Africa. Fast forward to where we are now, that system has never changed. We are still having a dual system in that sense, where you have the monarchy enjoying that privilege of saying they can appoint their own prime minister. And this is the British system, by the way. They can appoint their prime minister, who is not necessarily going to be dictated upon by a president, you know, a president replacing what we used to have as Queen Elizabeth, or a member of the monarchy who used to sit over as head of state of South Africa. So as we're transitioning then, it meant that the presidents of Democratic Republic of South Africa won't have any particular power to be able to dictate what happens in the monarchy, which is why we see even today Inkosi Ubuthelezi is still acting as the Prime Minister of isiZwe samaZulu, and of course he carries that responsibility and power to be then that voice of reason within that particular jurisdiction. The President can only come in, and the democratic institutions can only come in according to the terms of the kingdom, but they cannot dictate. So that's what it is, the kind of democracy that we've inherited. When we talk about the role of traditional leadership, has given us that kind of a situation. In a way, Pramaik, when you look at it, it's something that has resulted to massacres like Inguza massacre. If you listen to the story of Inguza massacre, for example, it is just after the Bantu Administration Act was put in place, and people were saying, you know, in the mountains of Inguza, to say, we do not want you to use our kings and our chiefs and our royalties as puppets, you know, talking to the colonial system and rulers, because you are giving them power according to your words, but you actually are using them as puppets to fulfill your own gains. And we know what that meant, right? It was around issues of land, dispossession of people, moving people into different places, and so on. And land occupations, massive land occupations happened under that system. And that's what we are sitting with. Right. Unfortunately, and then in this democratic dispensation, with the rift happening now within isiZwe samaZulu, that is why you could see the manner in which the government of the African National Congress had this lazy walk towards interference, you know, within the disputes, you know, or participating in trying to resolve the disputes of the royal family, really leaving it to Nkosi Buthelezi to deal with, and the members of the royal family. And that is what is happening. They can only really play that. So there's that kind of limitation that is imposed by the constitution in that regard, that the royal family has got to be given that space. And that is where, even as the coronation is happening, I mean, we know, Pramaik, we come a long way with this, right? South Africans will remember that we had that process just after the death of Queen Mantombi in the reading of the will. How Inkosi uMisuZulu, you know, was protected by security guards, you know, when there were challenges happening, even at the time of the reading of the will. Following that, you find this dispute in court that is currently happening, as Uzimasa puts it so well. So nobody can intervene. Now we've got a newly elected Provincial Executive Committee of the African National Congress that actually went a couple of days ago, I think yesterday, they went to Ekosini to go and introduce themselves, but they can do very little to interfere, you know, in these kinds of disputes. The Premier has got that responsibility, as we have been saying, Pramaik, Umama Unomusa Dube Ncube, to find ways of mitigating the situation. But again, she's also limited by the constitution, which puts it clearly that she's got to respect the power of traditional leaders to be able to resolve their matters in the manner that they deem fit according to their customs and traditions. Section 31 of the constitution also promotes that, you know, cultural, linguistic, and traditional communities have got to enjoy those rights, including the royal family. So that's what it means for us. It really means that we can just be spectators, and we can look at South Africa whilst the royal family tries to really find solutions for itself, which is a set reality that we are faced with, Pramaik. Mm.
As Masa, the last word is going to go to you. Just as a person who is currently living in KZN, how popular, from where you're sitting, is the monarchy? Because, you know, as I was saying earlier on, that, you know, we live in a modern state where we vote and we say we choose our own leaders and all of that. But at the same time, it looks like we also would like to hold on to the traditional ways, if you like. So if, from where you're sitting, how popular is the monarchy in KZN?
You know, Pramaik, I covered the late king a lot of his events, and the popularity was always overwhelming to me. It was sometimes bigger than what you would see when you cover the president, for example. And I remember this imbizo that he called, I think it was in 2018, when government was talking about holding Ingonyama Trust to account in parliament. And he mobilized in 2 days, and there were thousands of people. So he enjoyed a lot of respect. He enjoyed a lot of trust. They love him. they respect him. They give him his place. Whether you are a premier, you bow down to him. And I mean, in the manner in which the provincial government has always supported the king, you know, especially during from Sbun Debele's time, financially for his programs, you know, so and nobody complains here. And I remember there was a time when he was talking about the Zulu nation must you know, donate money so that he can fight in court with government regarding, you know, a whole lot of issues around the Ngonyama Trust. And a lot of people at a newsroom that I worked at the time were saying, we are going to donate. And so that dispels the notion that it's a man who never went to school, Kwanongoma, who will listen to the king. It's the middle class. It's the upper class. It's everyone who listened to him. I think right now, what I've seen, I don't know if it's genuine support, or it looks like a lot of people are aligning themselves with who they think is, you know, ultimately going to be king. Hence, we see pictures, you know, of a lot of business people and, you know, politicians in the proximity of Umntwana Misuzulu. But what I do know is that a lot of people in KwaZulu-Natal are very concerned about the divisions that are in the royal family. They would still love to see the unity and the authority that existed before King Goodwill Zwelithini died. So in terms of influence, I think the monarchy is still very much big. And also in terms of influence, politicians are, you know, always falling on their feet, you know, and trying to be seen as, you know, we support so and so, you know, we are pro so and so, because it's also a matter of voting, of votes. Remember when the new guys here in KZN, the newly elected top five took over, they said one of the reasons that Sihle Zikalala was removed was because he failed to intervene. I'm not sure how, but in terms of the dispute at the royal family and the Shembe Church, and that thing led them to losing votes. So they do not want, you know, any of that happening again. So in terms of influence, it's massive. It's massive, Brahmai.
Okay. Hey, unfortunately, that's where we're going to have to wrap it up with my guests on the Sunday Times Politics Weekly for this week. Our guests being Dr. Fikile Vilakazi, who teaches public policy and political science at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, as well as Zimasa Matiwane, who's a Sunday Times politics journalist based in the kingdom in KZN. Hey, we appreciate your time. I'm Mike Siluma. Until next time, do stay safe, stay blessed, and let's do good for our country.